Welcome back to Dear Skylar, where I talk to all kinds of amazing people about topics that I'm commonly asked about as a transgender educator and advocate. Things like gender and race, sexuality, sports, mental health, and so many things in between and beyond. At almost every speech I give, especially at elementary and middle schools, I get asked by a kid something along the lines of, "Do you feel like you belong? Have you found happiness? Do you feel like people accept you? Have you been accepted, Skylar?" And all of this revolves around, I think, a very central question, which is, how do we find belonging without conforming? And that second part, I think a lot of people then assign to people who have different identities, perhaps trans people, queer people, people of color, and so on. But I think everybody has been at war with belonging at some point, right? Everybody, including you, listener, here today, you felt like you didn't belong at some point in some space for some reason. And that's because belonging is a very central human desire. It's actually the thing that's allowed us to survive in so many ways. But in a very globalized society where how we look, how we act, how we talk, the money that we use, where all of these things are very standardized, sometimes that also standardizes how we present ourselves and who we are, or at least who we think we are. I think that sometimes society can trick us into thinking we have to be these standardized versions of ourselves in order to belong, when the reality is that many of us would be much more happy if we allowed all parts of ourselves, all of our authenticity into our daily lives. But the question is, how do we do that and risk conforming, right? How do we do that and feel like we belong? To address this question, how do we find belonging without conforming? I spoke with my friend Addison Rose Vincent, they/them, a consultant and trainer with their business Break the Binary LLC that provides love, inclusion, educational training to businesses, schools, and organizations all around the world. They're also a social media influencer at Break the Binary. They run the nonprofit History Reimagined, and they're on the board for LA Pride. Addison is an all-around amazing human, and I'm so excited to invite you into this conversation. Here we go. Well, Addison, I'm super excited that you're here to chat with us. We are currently in an Airbnb in LA, which is the city in which you live. If there's, you know, a lawnmower that goes by, well, no, that's why we're not in a studio.
That sounds good. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I got to first meet you actually at Blair's wedding, mm-hmm. but had of course been following you for a long time, and, you know your work, but I would love if you could just share for our listeners who might not know, you know, who you are, name and pronouns, and then just a quick, you know, bio, something you want to share about yourself, who you are.
Sure. Yeah. My name is Addison Rose Vincent. I use they, them pronouns. I'm a consultant and trainer with my business, Break the Binary LLC, and I provide a lot of inclusion and educational training to businesses, schools, and organizations around the world. I'm also a social media influencer. Ooh, that's cute. And I do that. And then I'm also running a nonprofit program called History Reimagined, where we connect youth at risk of the school to prison pipeline with their own family and community history as a way to build confidence and resilience.
Wow. Just a couple, you know, minor things in the world.
And then I'm also on the board for LA Pride. So I just need to mention that too.
Wow, very nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm excited for this year because we have Mariah Carey and Megan Thee Stallion performing. So it's going to be a good year.
That's pretty exciting. A little plug for that, but that sounds awesome.
Very excited.
Maybe I'll be able to make, I've never been to LA Pride, so maybe I'll have to come out.
It's a good one. I think you should come out. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Maybe I will. Yeah. awesome. Well, I've always loved the work that you do. And I think I wanted to start by asking you, and this is like very surface level, because this is where I would like to sort of, I think people's entree to a lot of people is how they look, right? Mm. And I know that you've talked a lot about how you look and how you present, and we're not going to do like a slow entry. We're just going to go right to it.
That sounds good. Yeah.
I'm not one for small talk. So, we've talked about this before when I talked to you about some other project I was working on. Mm-hmm. You were talking about how you have spent time in your life taking away parts of yourself, walking through the world, whether that be how you present, mm-hmm. you know, what you wear, whether or not you shave your beard, whether or not you dress a certain way. Mm-hmm. And the amount that you have to think, and that I think a lot of trans people, especially trans femmes, have to think about how they present themselves in the world, I think is striking. And I think not everybody quite understands that. So I was wondering if you could talk about that, even just like you're wearing, you know, these beautiful golden yellow, I don't know what color you'd call it, pants and shoes that match, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And you've got these hoop earrings and you're like, you look so put together to me. And that like struck me when I saw you this morning, this afternoon, whatever time.
This afternoon. Yeah.
So I was wondering if you could just talk about getting dressed this morning and like how you think about getting dressed, what you consider. It's a very open-ended sort of big question, but I'm curious about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just the way that we express ourselves is so important. And at the same time, I think that we end up putting a lot of pressure on ourselves to figure out how we want to present ourselves to the world to be seen as ourselves. At the end of the day, for me, it's coming to terms with recognizing and understanding that going out to the world, there's going to be so many people who don't understand who we are, won't respect us, won't see us. And that's okay because we know who we are. So for me, when I go into my closet and I'm looking at items, I figure, okay, this one brings me joy today. I'm going to wear this outfit, or this piece looks good with this piece. And for me, having the body that I have after, you know, being on hormones for now, wow, I think 6 years and having surgery, having facial hair, long hair, all this combined, you know, for me, I just feel myself. I feel like me. And it's been a journey in itself. I think that when I was first coming out as trans and non-binary, this is back in 2013, I felt an incredible amount of pressure to express myself in a more gender binary way. And so I would shave my face. I was wearing a lot of makeup. I tried to dress as feminine as possible. And at that time, even though I was identifying as non-binary, I felt that expressing myself in a gender non-conforming way, in a way that was maybe androgynous, I was going to receive a lot of pushback. And I still do to this day.
Sure.
But at that time, I wasn't as confident. And I didn't have as much support either. I was in Orange County. I was like the only openly trans and non-binary person on my college campus at that time. And I also felt that there was a matter of like respectability politics. Like people would respect you more. They would welcome you into certain spaces. They would listen to you better if you looked like you were conforming. So yeah, that's kind of what I deal with. And so to this day, I feel like sometimes pressure to shave my face. Sometimes I feel pressure to actually identify as a trans woman. There's a lot of people within and outside the community that tell me you have to choose. So that's something that's been really tough.
Yeah. As you were talking about pressure to shave your beard, I was admiring how nice it is. and like, I, you know, you've manicured it well. I think it looks beautiful. And
thank
I think
you.
I was thinking about the word beard and beauty put together and how for me that feels like natural to say, but I think it's because I've been in this community. I've been exposed to lots of different people in the community. And at the same time, I think that's not sort of a standard in our society of considering beards as beautiful.
Right.
Or just like as expansive as not just for men and a certain type of man too.
Right.
So that struck me because I would love to invite other people into what it feels like to expand our concepts of what hair on our face could mean, right? Length of hair and all these kinds of different things. And I'm wondering how you kind of walk through that journey on your own, because it sounds like at the beginning, it wasn't something you were able to see as part of your, and beauty doesn't have to be the word you use, but at the beginning, it was something you hid and you changed.
Yes.
And it sounds like it looks like that's not where you are now. And how did you make that shift? And I hear that it's part of it was, you know, not caring necessarily about what other people think, but like how, like how do you get there? You know?
Yes. Great questions. With my beard, I want to say back in 2013, when I was first coming out, I was shaving constantly because I felt like I needed to hide it in order to conform and respectability politics. Right. But all along, I was always curious about what I would look like with a beard. And I don't know, I just kept having this feeling that like, I wanted to try it out. I wanted to grow it out. And it wasn't until 2016, I went home for a summer to Michigan with my family, and I was staying with them for a couple months. And I decided to just let it grow up. And I loved how it looked. And then I was doing some job interviews back here in Los Angeles. And I felt within myself that I would not be accepted as a trans person, accepted as a person even, if I had my beard and the body that I was having and the long hair too. So I shaved. And I continued to shave because I felt that now that I was presenting myself as this in my interviews and I was presenting myself when I was coming back to Los Angeles, that I needed to maintain that. And then I started hormones in 2017. My body was shifting and changing. I felt I was becoming more feminine in my own eyes. And the more that I became feminine in that sense with my body, this part of myself was like, I feel like I'm getting away from this androgynous gender nonconforming part of my side too. And I need to nourish that. So it wasn't until 2019 that I left some of my nonprofit jobs. And I was like, I'm done kind of playing this respectability game. I'm done trying to look how other people want me to look. Mm-hmm. I'm going to grow out my beard. And I had a lot of people initially being like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, this looks so weird. I had a few friends that were really excited. Mm. But I was really mostly inspired by another friend of mine who's non-binary with a beard. Mm-hmm. And their name is Luna. Mm-hmm. Gorgeous person and super confident and has been rocking a beard and being feminine in their expression for many years before me. So when I saw that they could do that, I was like, I can do that too. I can finally let this happen. And I did. And I've loved having my beard. I think it's filled in really nicely, like you said.
I think it has. I think I'm a little jealous, I have to be honest.
I actually have a lot of trans guys who will come up to me and they'll be like, oh, I wish I had your beard. And they're like,
it's one of those things.
But, you know, it's actually funny that you brought up, you know, trans masculine, like, you know, folks who want to have facial hair, because there is this sense of like, if I have a beard, I'll be accepted more as a man, as a masculine person, I'll be read more that way. So it's just interesting when there's that understanding sometimes within our community that a beard is associated with masculinity. Sure. And so when I have that on my face with my body and stuff too, people are like, what is going on? But I love
it. I love it.
I love that too. I actually don't mind leaving people confused sometimes too.
Sometimes they need a little bit of confusion, you know?
Yeah. But when you said earlier too, like you've been exposed to so many people of all different expressions in the community and maybe for a while now, I think a lot of mainstream America hasn't. Mm-hmm. A lot of communities out there haven't been exposed to people like us. Mm-hmm. And I want to say too that at first, if I were to see someone like me within my own community, if I was just entering, I might even be a little bit resistant. Mm-hmm. I might even want to tell that person, you look better without a beard, you know? Mm-hmm. So it took me time to unlearn sometimes my own, I guess, transphobia.
Yeah,
internalized. Maybe my own binarism. I don't know what you'd call that.
Misogyny, I think, to some degree.
Yeah. And also understanding, too, that like, facial hair has no gender. I think Alok talks a lot about this too. Body hair doesn't determine gender. Fashion mm-hmm. doesn't determine gender. And thinking about how so many cis women, you know, have facial hair, body hair.
Yeah.
So many cis men maybe also grow breast tissue or mm-hmm. other, you know, mm-hmm. larger hips, whatever that be. You know, there's no one type of body or, you know, facial hair kind of thing to associate with a certain gender. It's open.
Well, I think it's one of those things where transphobia actually hurts cis people too, because their bodies don't also fall on these like very, very narrow categories that is not only transphobic, but they're also usually misogynist and also racist and all these other things. And so it's so interesting to me when I think about trans liberation, especially with bodies, in this case, beards, but just all of our bodies, there's so much more there for everybody if we don't put people in these little boxes. But one of the things I wanted to ask you also about, you've mentioned it a few times, is the concept of people telling you that, especially within the community, right? Mm. Of course, I think we'd expect that cis people would say, oh, you would look better without a beard, what have you, but because they're in that world. But trans people, you know, that always strikes me when we pull ourselves down, you know, as the crabs pulling people out of the barrel.
But I don't see it as someone pulling us down. More survival.
Yes.
It's more like, I think that they're trying to pull us up. Mm. You know, they're trying to say like, hey, babe, you might be able to access more resources, be more successful in life, maybe happier, have a partner if you do these things. Mm-hmm, and that's usually the messaging that they received from someone else. And then that person is probably also informed that way.
Yeah.
And it becomes this kind of like intergenerational aspect within our own communities of how do you survive as a trans person in this world?
Yeah.
And so I don't always get disrespected. I don't feel disrespected when people say that from within the community. Outside the community, that's a whole other thing too, right?
sure.
And sometimes they also think that they're being, you know, trying to help us too.
Yeah.
But again, those are microaggressions. And if it's coming from within the community, I don't see it as a personal thing for me. I actually think about, wow, this person in front of me was probably taught that. And maybe they're also denying the ways that they could have expressed themselves too. So It's I don't know, our community, I think at the end of the day, underneath everything, is rooting for each other. Mm-hmm. We love each other. Sometimes it's just not expressed always in the best ways, and that's okay.
I love that you're able to receive it with love, because I think many people might not. And I think there's a lot of pain there, especially in how much you, I'm imagining you've grown to be able to accept yourself in all of the ways that you are. And I think that, you know, for me, this is not the same, but I've had experience. So my mastectomy scar, my chest scar, is very big. It's also very thick, and it's also sort of dark colored. It's like dark purple. And if I'm cold, it's even darker.
Cool.
So very, very like prominent, right? When I first got the scar, it was also very red, and it was raised, and it sort of almost looked angry, at least to some people. I loved it. I was like, I paid for this. Like,
yeah.
I worked hard for this, and I had no desire for it to be different. And I've just kind of let it be as it is. But I got so many comments, yep, all from trans people,
yep,
that said, here's how to change your scar. Here's how to make it go away. Oh, did you know you can get surgery to remove the scar? Oh, did you know you could have laser treatment? And here's all the oils and the whatevers. And it never stopped. And even now, I still get every once in a while I'll get a comment about my scar, or I'll get, you know, why does your scar look like that? You know? And I think at first it bothered me for a very short period of time. It bothered me, but very quickly I learned, oh, they want it to be this way because that's how they see me receiving love. And I felt a very similarly. So when you first explained this to me, and it was a couple months ago, you said that you receive it as love. I was like, oh, that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
But I also hear it even more than love. I hear it as an invitation to other trans people to love themselves just like perhaps you do. Mm. So anyways, in that vein, I'm curious if you've had conversations with trans people, maybe one you could remember, where you sort of invited them into more, I guess. Does that make sense? Like
so they maybe said something like that, and then getting them to think more about it?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
like, how do you have those conversations?
I mean, just last weekend I was at a party, and it was all trans people. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm.
And
beautiful.
I loved it, right? You know, and this girl was talking to me for about probably like 10, 15 minutes. We had never met before, but we started talking, getting to know each other, what we do for work and where we live. And she just kind of stops the conversation. She goes, can I just ask a question? And I'm like, yeah, what's up? And she's like, why do you have the beard?
Mm.
Like, you'd look so much better without the beard. And I just told her, well, this is just what makes me feel like me.
Mm.
You know, I like it. Mm. That's just all there is to it.
Mm.
And she, it got her just like, I saw her, like, the cogs were, you know, moving and stuff too. And I kind of just got her to start thinking about and start talking about maybe the ways that she felt like she had to express herself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so she started talking to me about her hormone journey and about different surgeries she was pursuing, and all of it informed by what other trans people had been telling her to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just got her to, you know, slow down a little bit and be like, okay, like, if you want to do that, that's great. But mm-hmm. know too that you can do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
I think that for a lot of trans and non-binary people, we're creating our journey of our transition based on scripts, based on blueprints, based on whatever it is that we've seen from other trans and non-binary people, because we're all figuring it out right now. But because it's so confusing and gender so expansive, I think that a lot of us end up just looking to, okay, who's done something like this before, and I'm going to go down that same route, or mm-hmm. I'm going to do this. And mm-hmm. so for a lot of trans and non-binary people, I think that transition is in their head supposed to look a certain way.
Right, right.
You go through certain medical procedures, mm-hmm. hormones, surgeries, whatever that be. You have to socially transition a certain way, legally transition a certain way. And if you do all those things, and you've transitioned successfully.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm here to remind people that, like, you don't have to do any of those things, mm-hmm. and you can do some of those things. You can do something completely different and still be valid.
I love that mission, and I think you do it so well. And I think the reason I started this conversation with asking about what I would consider more superficial, right, just like how you look, is that it is the first thing that people see. And it's something that, you know, I think is perhaps undeniable in some ways. If I want to disrupt, you know, personally, if I want to disrupt somebody's thinking about something, I don't necessarily present myself in a way that is confusing, if you will, the way you use that word earlier. And sometimes I want to, but it doesn't feel authentic to me, so I don't do it.
Right.
but I love that the way that you walk through the world is also inviting people to ask questions, and or not necessarily ask questions of you.
You know,
for them to hopefully they're not,
you know, they can ask me questions if they pay me, you know,
if they pay,
you know, like that.
In that case, then they should ask you questions and pay you. But what I mean is more ask, like, it does invite questions when we walk through the worlds in ways that confuse people, I guess. And I want them to ask themselves questions. If they want to ask, then you, they should pay you.
Right. You know, I think we're all on that journey. And like we talked about earlier too, like, you know, I carry that transphobia within myself. We all carry that within ourselves, within the community even. And it's important for us to do that work of unlearning it. And I find that over the years, as I've challenged my own transphobia as a trans and non-binary person, I've just learned so much more about myself and been able to explore more of my identity and better understand myself too. So I just encourage everyone to do that work.
Yeah.
So when you were asking too, just about experiences with what other people are telling me to do. When I first started taking hormones back in 2017, at that time I was still identifying as non-binary, right? And when I started taking hormones and I was talking to people publicly about it within the community, they were all like, wow, you're finally a trans woman. So you're finally choosing. And so I just want to say out there too that, you know, for non-binary people who are pursuing certain medical procedures or certain types of transition that might align with maybe more of a trans woman's or trans man's type of transition, that's still valid. You're still non-binary, and it doesn't mean that you have changed your gender because of how you're transitioning.
Yeah. When I've spoken with you about this before, I had asked you, I think, in a previous conversation, what's the most common misconception that you receive? And you told me one of two things. One was that people perceive you as intersex, which I thought was fascinating because intersex is not, I feel like, not a commonly known thing.
Right.
but then people assign it to you. And then the second one was that people perceive you as a trans woman.
Right.
And we talked a bit about that in terms of safety as well, and people sort of assigning a category to you as, you know, a way to be safe in the world, right? Way to find belonging. And and I know that from what I understand, you found belonging on your own. So I'm curious, you know, how you've done that. And if you could explain, like, just kind of muse on how you found belonging without fitting this category. And there's a category of non-binaryhood too, that I know a lot of people feel stuck to in whatever androgyny means. And,
and
I think you've found your own sort of belonging. How have you done that?
Easy question. Well, when it comes to like how people perceive me, you're right. People box me into being either intersex or a trans woman. I get she heard a lot. But then I'm also asked if I'm a trans man and if I'm transitioning, right?
Fascinating.
Right. So they think that I'm like, you know, like transitioning
like to tea or something.
I'm on tea or something like that. That's why I have a beard. I'm like, all right, yeah. And then
I love people's perceptions of us. Right. Like, just they go and they do gymnastics.
I actually got a comment on one of my posts recently where it was like, it's so cool that I can't tell what you were born as. And I was like, I okay, thank you.
It's so cool that you're like, thinking what? About my genitals. Thank you.
So I'm just like, it's just people always wanting to guess. People always wanting to box and categorize. And I think that's like a human instinct, I guess, or it's just human nature to want to understand everyone's place in a way, or what their role is, or how they fit into their lives. And I'm here again just to like exist as me. And I don't necessarily feel like I fit into any categories, and that's fine. But when it comes to belonging, though, over the years, I've found that building community and finding a chosen family that maybe understands because they're also non-binary or are just incredibly supportive and understanding has been really, really vital for me. And I think most of my friends at this time are actually trans women who have embraced my femininity, but understood that I'm also still non-binary. And that's just been a beautiful relationship to build with them that I think also challenges my past experiences with trans women. So yeah, building community has been super helpful for me. And when it comes to belonging, I think that we don't have a lot of representation of non-binary androgynous folks, I want to say, beyond being white, slender, and typically AFAB. And so I think that it's really important for those of us who are non-binary, who are gender nonconforming in all different types of ways. And again, androgynous and gender nonconforming can look any different type of way, is to be visible and to create that representation, to be the blueprint for other people, to know that they are possible. But on top of that, I feel like I meet a lot of non-binary people who feel that they have to express themselves in a binary way.
Right.
Like just like what I went through. Right.
Right.
And again, to be feel accepted. And a lot of them might even still express themselves in a way that aligns with their assigned at birth gender. And in the sense of like, I won't be able to have a partner. I won't be able to succeed. I won't be able to have jobs. I won't be able to have support from my family if I do dress or express myself in any other way. And I think that's all completely valid and should be respected. And again, too, at the end of the day, we're just trying to survive and possibly thrive in this world. And I also want to encourage non-binary people that if you want to try something different, if you want to express yourself in a different way, if you've thought about pursuing those hormones, if you've thought about having that medical procedure, explore it a bit more, question that, be curious about it. And if you need help and you need support or better understanding about that, reach out to me, reach out to other people who are happy to share our journeys.
I think community is so vital. And I know for me has been absolutely life-saving. And I was just telling you before we started the recording that even this podcast doesn't feel, you know, so much like work because I get to just hang out with amazing community members like yourself. And that feels so healing, honestly. And like, I get to learn from community and I get to be with community. I get to create community. And I think that's the biggest privilege that this job, not just the podcast, but you know, that the work that we do brings, because it demands that we connect with community in order to do the work we do. I wanted to go back to something you were going back to talking about beards. The focus is not the beard necessarily, but it's like what it, like,
I love it.
Represents. you know, one of my friends who's also a trans guy, or I guess, I don't know if we could consider what I want to be his friend, but his name's Alex. He wrote a book. I think it's called like Alex's Quest for a Beard.
Okay.
He's a trans guy. And he was one of the first YouTubers that I watched, you know, figuring out that I was trans. And he, it took him a long time to be able to access testosterone, even though he wanted it. And when he finally did, he was like, I'm going to grow a beard, you know? And I think that's not like a uncommon experience for a lot of trans guys. They really want to grow a beard. They're very excited about it. And some people do, and some people don't, and whatever. And as we know, it's genetics that, you know, have the impact on that. I never thought about facial hair. So like before my transition, I was like not at all focused on facial hair. I was also fairly confident at the time I was never going to grow a beard because my mom is Asian. She's East Asian specifically, and we're not a hairy group for the most part. And my dad doesn't even have that much facial hair. Like he doesn't grow a full beard either. But I don't have a ton of facial hair, but I have way more than I expected. And so it's been an interesting journey. I will say shaving is a pain. So unlike a logistical note, it makes sense why you wouldn't want to shave just because it's a pain in the butt.
Yes, that was also a factor for sure. I mean, I hated shaving every day. It was terrible.
It's exhausting and it's painful.
Yes. And I felt like my beard was like always trying to peek through anyway. And I was just like, I felt like after a while I was like, you know what? I think it's just, it wants to come out. Like let it grow out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really interesting. Well, you have a beautiful beard now.
Oh, thank
it's
you.
Red and brown. I love it. Looks great. Yeah. I think that for a lot of folks, there's certain maybe characteristics that we look for in our medical transitions in particular to signify that we made it or that like we've achieved that gender expression. And I think for a lot of trans masculine guys, it's typically top surgery and it's also facial hair. That's what I hear a lot of. For trans femmes, I think it's breast growth and hip growth and just overall like softening. And it's funny because I'll talk to some of my trans girls, you know, the friends that I have, and they'll be like, Addison, like you grew such like your chest grew so much on hormones compared to us. And it's like, they're like, it's not fair. Like how do you as a non-binary person get that? But we didn't. And so that's just a funny thing. But yeah, we all have these signifiers for us that help validate who we are.
Well, and I think that one of the reasons that I have been so like focused on facial hair in this conversation, not only because your beard is great, but it's also because they are false signifiers to some degree of gender, right? And actually not to some degree, to a lot of degrees. And one of the things I have experienced in my life, and I think you probably have a similar experience with this, is especially cis men who will be upset that my beard as a trans person is either better or comparable to theirs.
Yep.
And it's so interesting to watch that disruption of their masculinity. We talk about fragile masculinity. Masculinity is so fragile.
Yep.
And I've had men tell me like, well, you're like almost like more of a man than me. And I'm like, first of all, this is not a spectrum. Like, you, if you identify as a man, then you're a man. We can just move on. We don't have to like map it as like, oh, I'm more man than you are, right? In that sense, I don't see man enough in that sense, and I don't want to. But there's this like hierarchy that beards draw. And then an insecurity that they incite, it seems. And I'm curious what your experience is with that, especially as somebody who presents much more femme than I do, or, you know, than other people might, with also a beard.
Yeah, no, I get like cis guys telling me the same thing too, just being like, wow, your beard is better than mine. Like, I can't believe that. Or
it's unfair.
It's unfair. right? That it's that thing of like that you don't deserve that. You don't deserve to have a body that is seen as beautiful or attractive or have certain characteristics. You don't deserve that. I deserve it, right? And it becomes this, like you're saying, that fragile masculinity or fragile femininity, and sometimes too. Like I'll have, again, like, you know, girls coming up to me, cis girls, being just like, it's not fair that you have like that chest. It's not fair that you have like whatever, that body and stuff too. Or that my hair is also talked about a lot too. They're like, you have such nice hair. It's not fair.
You do have nice hair.
I do.
And it is fair.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I know. I deserved it. You know what?
Well, you know what? It begs the question for me about what is deserving? What isn't, like, who is entitled to what? Because when we're talking about this, we're talking about access to what people have considered gendered traits, but we could also just call them traits. And if we do that, let's move away from trying to gender them. Even if we just say who deserves access to facial hair, who deserves access to nice hair? What is also nice hair?
What is nice hair?
Who deserves access to boobs, to hips, to butts, to what, like who, you know? And when I think about that, this is going to sound irrelevant for a second, but bear with me.
Go for it.
At my college graduation, our Dean Karana said, it was so well done. It's the whole Harvard graduating class. And he says to us, none of you deserve to be here. That was like one of his opening lines.
Love it.
And he was like, what does that mean? And the speech, I'm going to paraphrase, but the speech basically said, nobody deserves or doesn't deserve to be here. There are probably people who technically deserve to be here more than you. They just didn't have the access. They didn't just have the privilege. It was an amazing speech. I wish I could like bottle up and give it to everybody.
Very humbling.
Very humbling. And I was living for it. Cause I just was like, this is what I tell people all the time. Like, right. not those exact words, but the concept of like, who the heck deserves what? Like, this is a game of privilege and access and luck. It is not a game of deserving.
Yes.
So when we think about gendered traits, It's a game of luck in many ways, and then also privilege and access to hormones, access to cosmetic treatments, access to, I don't know. I mean, nice hair has a lot of things attached to it. White supremacy is part of it.
Yep.
But also like being able to shower, being able to care for it, being able to, you know, all these kinds of things.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean we can't be proud. Like, I'm proud of my graduating from Harvard and from going there. But also it's privilege, right? So I just would love to hear your thoughts on
that. Well, I mean, I don't think that I would be able to personally express myself the way that I express myself. Mm-hmm. I've been able to pursue the hormones that I've pursued, have the surgeries that I've had. Mm-hmm. If I wasn't here in Los Angeles, you know, I think that's a big thing for me.
Sure.
I do think about people in other states where currently and historically they've been denied healthcare access or gender-affirming surgeries. Or just even support sometimes too. And so I think that it's a lot of privilege to be here in Los Angeles and also to be someone who's so connected to the community that I know where to get my resources to, like who to go to, who to talk to. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it's gatekeeping, which is really unfortunate.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that also goes back to the point of that every trans and non-binary person is valid on their own. Mm-hmm. They don't have to medically, socially, or legally transition in order to be valid, because of accessibility, because of choice. And I think that's really, really important. And yeah, I think that when it comes time for some trans people who've been able to access everything that they want and who are horrible people, even to our own community, right?
I know who you're thinking about.
Right? You know, there's multiple people that I'm thinking about.
Oh, that's true.
I think that like, I might initially think like, oh, they didn't deserve it because of their politics or whatever they're saying about the community. And it's like, no, at the end of the day, all trans and non-binary people deserve access to whatever we need for our own gender-affirming process or transition. It is what it is.
I think it's also situated in this is a topic I've been really like thinking a lot about, which is like the removal of access to your own body, right? And sort of this removal of body autonomy, whether we talk about trans people, queer people, people with uteruses, Black people, Indigenous, whatever. We can go to any marginalized group and talk about the removal of like connection to your own body, groundedness in your own body. And then I'm thinking about what you were saying about like, and we're talking about cis men or anybody really saying it's unfair, right? Mm-hmm. And what I hear is they feel entitled to these characteristics, specifically physically, right? Beards or hips or boobs or whatever. They feel entitled to these characteristics that say, oh, these are for me and they're not for anybody else. But the reality is like genetics decides who they're for. And again, privilege of access to whatever. But at the core, it is genetics. And then what, right? Then what do we do with it if you actually aren't entitled to it because your genetics didn't decide, right, that you're going to grow this beard or that have those boobs or, you know, whatever.
Well, it still goes back to this binary thinking that, you know, sex and gender are both binary, right? Genetics are going to be binary as well. And
right.
That's all rooted in white, racist, colonialist, you know, kind of thinking.
Yeah.
So I think that people really need to unlearn that, including cis people. And you're totally right. Cis people think that they it's not that sometimes they even deserve it, is that they need it.
Mm.
They need it in order to, for them to be seen as valid in their own gender identities. Because, yeah. I mean, I don't know, growing up, like I felt like a lot of girls, you know, even way before I was coming out as trans or non-binary, I would notice that like guys would always be policing each other's genders.
Yep.
Girls are always policing each other's genders. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes this whole thing about like, I need to prove myself to my peers. I need to prove myself to my family. I need to prove myself to the world about my gender identity. So I need to do this, 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 and this.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we see trans people like who are transitioning and maybe in ways too that are quote unquote successful, right? Mm-hmm. You know, cis people see this and go, damn, like they did that, you know, but I can't and stuff too. This is just, it just speaks to their, like we talked about earlier, that fragility. And it's unfortunate too, because I think at the end of the day, like we can support each other. And again, like you said earlier too, as we recognize that transphobia affects everyone, that cis people too would really benefit from understanding that their gender identities aren't based on certain characteristics, aren't based on having to perform a certain way, that they can just exist in their own bodies with their own genetics, with their own whatever, and still be valid.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And find belonging. And I think that's why I asked you about belonging earlier, is because I think my observation is that cis people who police each other's, you know, gender expression or clothing or what have you are usually doing so because they think that's the ticket to belonging.
Yeah.
You know, it's honestly kind of similar to how if a trans woman tells you, oh, you'd look better without a beard, mm-hmm. or if a trans person is telling me that I need to fix my scar or whatever, it's out of some kind of love. And I don't know if I want to say that like toxic masculinity is out of love, but I think it is rooted in love. I think it is a desire to be loved, and it is a desire to find love, right?
To be loved.
Yeah.
You're totally right.
Yeah. And
it's saying that like, if you do this about yourself too, then I can feel good about my decisions too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I totally understand. I think that for belonging for me too, it's also not necessarily something that I find in the present.
Mm.
I find it through learning about history and realizing too that trans and non-binary people have existed throughout history. Mm. Also too that cis people have expressed their genders completely differently over the years. I even think too about how boys used to be assigned the color pink and girls were assigned the color blue, mm-hmm. you know, and historically we've seen men in different types of like type of dresses in a way, or robes,
makeup, wigs, makeup. Heels.
Yes, exactly. And I think that if we look at that history, we'll realize too that, again, even the binary gender
mm-hmm.
hasn't been expressed in the same way that we see it today.
Mm-hmm.
And there's sometimes even more openness and diversity in the past. It's really interesting.
I think you're so right. I love that you brought that up, because whenever, you know, we've got certain, we don't need to name names, but we've got certain public figures that are tearing down, quote, men in dresses, you know, and mm-hmm. when I'm talking about men in dresses, we're not talking about, this is not the transphobic comment, men in dresses, although it's also transphobic,
yeah.
But I mean, literally like, you know, Harry Styles in dresses or other, you know, men who are publicly wearing feminine quote unquote clothing.
Right.
And then we've got public figures that are super angry about this, like bring back manly men. Right.
Right.
And then
because that's what they were told growing up.
Right. And it's what they were told for men. It's what they were told they were supposed to be like. And for women, they were told that's what they need to aspire to, you know, be loved by. Mm. It's not very hard to do a little bit of research of like traditional clothing in, you know, this culture or that culture. And actually many of them have men wearing what would be considered a dress these days.
Yeah.
Right. And many of them also wearing makeup. Like, you don't even have to go back that far. Like, people think, oh, you know, the pharaohs in ancient Egypt wore, you know, skirts and makeup. Yes, they did. But you can just go back, you know, maybe a couple hundred years and look at, like, you know, old white men.
Correct. I think that, you know, it's I think it's really important for us to understand the history of how gender expression has been mm-hmm. in other cultures. Talking to these white supremacist transphobes about other cultures and how they've expressed it only strengthens their perspective on why they're doing this too, because they're racist, right? They don't give a shit about like what other cultures have done because they're actually fighting those cultures, right? And they want everyone to conform. So it's interesting what information they will listen to and what they don't care about or what they're actually against as well.
Right.
And I think it all ties back into like, again, seeing how transphobia and racism and classism, all these different isms tie together. And we see that in like even schools in Florida and across the state trying to get rid of like a critical race theory classes and education, because that would also include talking about queer and trans communities in other cultures and here in the United States even.
Right.
It's all tied together.
Yeah.
And it's really unfortunate. So when you're talking about like the whole men in dresses thing, it's been interesting to on the political side, right? Trying to ban drag, trying to ban trans people really from existing, trying to ban gender nonconformity. And we've seen that in history in the United States too,
sure.
right? With like literally criminalization of wearing certain types of clothing, right? Mm-hmm, and if it didn't match your ID, then you would be thrown in jail.
There actually was an ordinance in Chicago that actually still has not technically been removed. It was called the zipper ordinance, where women's zippers, quote, women's zippers, were on the back because somebody had to dress them, whereas men, even the ones who are rich, would dress themselves, and so their zippers were on the front. And so there was a bunch of, like, it was common for lesbian women to wear dresses, to wear pants with the zippers in the front like men. They wanted to, whatever, and that was illegal to do. And so police would raid the lesbian bars, and then they would run out in the back to flip around their pants so they could put the zipper in the back and prove that they were wearing women's pants. Anyways, an interruption of there is those ordinances, those, you know, orders to reduce or eliminate drag are deep.
Yeah, the police and politicians really have their priorities straight, right? You know, they've always had them for years.
Yes, always straight, focusing on which side of your pants your zipper goes.
Or right now, too, with all this gun violence, it's no, it's trans people
that
trans we need to focus on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or banning TikTok.
Yeah. You kind of laugh at some point at these things. I mean, reading the bills recently has just been, I mean, it's either absolutely devastating. I feel helpless. I feel tired. I feel angry. Or it's hilarious that this is what the solution, like how have they come up with this being the solution? And the answer is it's a distraction.
It's all a distraction. But it's interesting because they're saying that actually this TikTok ban stuff is created the most bipartisan kind of committee.
Really?
So it's been what's united mostly Republicans and Democrats right now, which is really just fascinating.
Right.
Anyway, the whole men in dresses thing, on the political side, we're seeing all that hate, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But socially, it's been interesting being on like social media right now. And right now I'm seeing this trend. I've seen it for probably the past few months or a year of at weddings having one of the groomsmen, I think that's what they're called, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's usually the best man will come out in a wedding dress and surprise the groom before the wedding.
It's like a joke. There's like
It's a cishet joke thing of because like before this it was that there'd always sometimes be that moment before the wedding where the bride and groom would reveal how they look to each other and they'd be crying and stuff too, and then they would go get married, right. But now there's become, I think from that, this hilarious trend of having the best man or another groomsman come out in the wedding dress and surprise the groom, and it'd be a hilarious thing where it's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe like this guy in a wedding dress, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I'm just thinking about how like little things like that just reiterate this idea too that we're supposed to present a certain way, and gender nonconformity or trans expression, whatever that be, is a joke. And we've seen that also to reiterate it through other comedies and other film and television shows over the years. I mean, just watch in Disclosure. I just want to put in that plug. Yes. I don't have to explain
everybody watch Disclosure.
Watch Disclosure. And you'll understand, too, that it's been this ongoing narrative of how people are supposed to respond mm-hmm. to gender nonconformity, mm-hmm. respond to transness. Mm-hmm. And so that's what happens to me a lot, too, actually. I walk down the street or I go places, too, and if it's not people calling me different slurs, it's people, like, breaking out into laughter. And I think that's actually really painful for me sometimes, mm-hmm. is just to feel like I'm a joke to people when I'm just trying to exist and get my coffee.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I mean, I being laughed at feels more painful in my imagination and my experience when it have been laughed at than being yelled a slur. I think the slurs are easy to roll off these days. I don't know. They're so ubiquitous. It's old.
I just say things just like, it takes one to know one, just like, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to say that they're painless and I don't want to dismiss them, but the laughter feels so like, it feels like twisting that knife. It feels like such a erasure of humanity. And I'm curious what you do in those moments. I don't want to dig too deep into it if you don't want to talk about it, but in those moments, what do you do?
I mean, over the years, you just have to, just roll with it, I guess, like you said. And I don't know. I think that for me, I just give myself, again, the context of why that person's probably laughing and the history of everything too. And then I go to a place of like feeling sad for them that maybe they've been laughed at themselves or that they'll never be able to experience the joy of being free with like expression and gender nonconformity. And I also wonder too, if maybe that person or that group of people, maybe someone in that group maybe they are trans or non-binary and they're coming to a place where maybe eventually they'll come out. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think about my own journey even as a kid, I was very feminine and I would be teased on the playground a lot and be called gay and be called like a lot of terms. Right. Mm-hmm. And before I even knew myself, before I even knew what I was attracted to or who I was and stuff too, I knew immediately that being called those things was a bad thing. So I were to say like I'm gay or whatever, or I'm this or that, not only am I proving them right, but I'm also that bad thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So for me, I had a lot of homophobia, a lot of transphobia internalized growing up. Mm-hmm. And I would even sometimes participate in bullying other kids who were also expressing themselves in a certain way. And so I see like that hurt, causes hurt and pain causes more pain. And so sometimes when people are saying horrible things to me or laughing at me or, leaving anonymous comments on social media, you don't understand completely. I just take a moment to understand that maybe that person is just in a place of pain and hurt.
Yeah.
Now, with that understanding, that doesn't mean that our feelings should be just put to the side, right? Or that we aren't allowed to feel something beyond, joy or happiness or forgiveness and stuff too. It's okay to be fucking angry. Mm. It's okay to be hurt and sad. It's okay to want to do something about it too. So I just want to validate that as well, because I felt like for a long time, part of that respectability politics was that for us as trans and non-binary people, especially those who are so public, we have to perform it a certain way. We always have to be happy and put together and polite. And when someone says something horrible to us, we just go, thank you. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to be human.
Mm, thank you. I mean, what struck me as you in the first half of you, explaining that is the empathy that you have for these folks who are so cruel in these moments. And I think you're right. I don't disagree with anything you said. I think you're right. It often comes from pain. Sometimes it's coming from fear and the fear of like what it could mean for them to accept that there's more to themselves, right? More to you, more to the world. I think there is a disruption that's happening. And I often like to say that like, trans people, we're considered a threat. And in many ways, we are a threat, not in the ways they say we're a threat, but we do threaten these systems that have imprisoned everybody, right? Yeah. These gendered systems. Yeah. So I am I resonate with the empathy, but I also am struck by the empathy. You're being laughed at. I'm imagining on like a subway car, but you're not in New York. But anyways, you're being laughed at, maybe walk down the street, what have you. And in that moment, you have learned to find empathy for their pain. And I think the second half of what you said is so important as well, where somebody said this to me recently. They were actually a trans femme non-binary person as well. And they said, queer fury has to be felt. And I had never heard the sentence queer, or the phrase queer fury. Mm-hmm. And I just was like, oh my God, I need that one. I'm grabbing that one. I'm taking that one home.
Put on a t-shirt. Let's go.
and what they said was, you know, you need to lament. You need to be angry. It's, mm-hmm. this is an indignance that says I have this feeling and it's valid. Yeah. And it's something that I've thought a lot about. I never heard the term queer fury before, and I love it. Yeah. But I have always sort of said that anger, or thought to myself, my anger in these moments is self-righteous in a way that says I deserve to be treated better.
Right.
And what would it mean for me to accept my anger as actually self-love?
Right.
And say, I'm angry because I love myself enough to know that this is wrong.
Yes.
Right. I feel that you have a very strong self-love, but I also imagine that has been something you've cultivated and that has been hard. So A, do you feel that you have a strong self-love? And B, if so, or I guess regardless of your answer, what has helped you sort of cultivate that?
You know, you open up a can of worms. So when it comes to self-love, I want to say it's a daily journey. Mm. There's some days where I feel that, some days I don't. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I find that love is not something that you have. Mm-hmm. It's a verb, it's an action, right? You know, it's something that you have to intentionally put in the work for, just like with yourself or with any relationship. Mm-hmm. Love requires work and mm-hmm. being conscious about it and being aware of it. Mm-hmm. And for me, I think that in my anger has sometimes come, you know, the most beautiful moments of self-love, like you've talked about. Mm-hmm. And part of loving ourselves means allowing ourselves to feel our feels. We don't always have to react based on our feels, right? Because
important distinction.
Right. Because our feelings are something that we can't control, but how we react, that defines who we are. Mm. And I think that it's really important for all trans and non-binary people to figure out what helps them love themselves more, because we all deserve it. We don't have to put aside our emotions just to people please and trying to just, you know, whatever that be. But I also understand too that for a lot of trans and non-binary people, they sometimes have to do that. And I've done that before out of survival, out of just trying to access resources, trying to be respected. So it's hard. It's hard. I think I want to say it's a privilege right now for me to be able to be in a place where I'm allowed to just feel my feels and react however I want to react, and know that I still have support. I still have resources. I still have safety, all that aspect.
I love what you said about self-love being a daily practice. And I think that's something that we miss, where like people consider love a feeling, you know, and I think it can be a feeling, sure. But I think that feeling is honestly irrelevant unless it drives action. Mm. And I think about this with like a loving partner, right? Like I've had people say to me, partners actually is, you don't have to be partner, anybody. I've had people say to me like, I love you. And then they don't act in accordance with that statement. Mm. And they might feel it. And I'm not going to tell them how they feel. I can't be like, you don't feel it, you love me, whatever. They feel what they feel. But if that doesn't translate into an action that is loving, then who cares? Mm. You know? So I hear you talking about love for ourselves in the same way that says, actually, you need to continuously love on yourself, right? And give yourself actions that are loving in order to continue, I guess, holding self-love. That also, you were as you're talking about that, you sort of talked about safety as well, and the kind of the line. And I think this is a very like difficult, tense line that is between being authentic and being safe. And I know that, you know, for listeners who don't know this, trans femme folks are the folks that experience the most violence, the most murders, the most all that kind of stuff in our country, especially trans femme of color. And I think that first, it's important for us to know that. The second thing is that from that, there's a reason for that. A lot about it is due to visibility, and then the question of safety. Mm-hmm. And every day you get up and you dress yourself and you figure out how you're going to walk through the world. Maybe you don't leave your house every single day, but the days that you do, I'm imagining there's a conversation about safety that's going on. And I'm curious what that conversation sounds like, and how you navigate that to choose sometimes maybe more authenticity and sometimes more safety.
It comes down to, do I have my own back?
Mm.
Because, when I go into the world, I can't control what other people are going to do.
Sure.
So I can't anticipate, I can't expect everyone to treat me with kindness and respect. I can't also expect that I'm going to experience like a lot of harm too. Mm. I don't know what people are going to do, but do I have my own back?
Mm.
Will I be able to stand up for myself in those moments? Will I be able to brush it off and not let it control my day or take over my emotions, my feelings, my reactions? So that's where it starts with me. It's like, today, do I have my own back? Today, am I loving myself? Today, do I want to see myself in the mirror and navigate this world that way? And some days I say no. And some days I say yes. And it's a journey where I'm trying to get more and more to just always have my back. But it's also a journey. It's okay. We have ups and downs, just like in a relationship with a partner too. Yeah. There's some days where maybe you're a bit more loving on some days than you are other days, right?
Right.
It's just a journey, and it's about commitment and about being conscious about it and aware. For me, I my on days where I don't always have my own back, might dress down, which means for me is like wearing bigger clothing, more layers, maybe not wearing makeup, whatever it be, like just trying to not maybe bring attention, quote unquote, bring attention to myself. And then other days I'm dressing up, I'm wearing the most stylish things. Like, I have got a great closet.
That
and,
I know.
And I'll put
I'm
on
seeing
some,
you online.
Yeah. So I'll put on some fabulous things and I'll just walk my dog around the block, just because I'm like, this is me.
I love that image of you walking around with the dog and then just dressing fabulously. I think that's perfect.
Exactly. And I think it's just, it's a daily thing. Like you said, for me, my self-love has been rooted in also self-care, which has included just like doing a lot of meditation, journaling. I also do yoga, work out as much as I can. And I'm also trying to do a lot of hobbies that speak to interests from my childhood.
Oh, I love that so much.
And I think it's really important for us all to think about what are the passions, the interests, the curiosities we had as kids before the world kind of like corrupted us in a way, if you want to say, to think about what are those things that you've always wanted to do with your life and maybe try it out now and nourish that inner child. Mm. So for me, that's included violin lessons.
Mm.
That's included pottery. I've been taking dance classes again. So just small things to nourish ourselves and to remind ourselves also too that we're not just trans and non-binary people. I think that happens a lot too, is that we feel like we're reduced down to an image or reduced down to one thing in our lives by the world. But within ourselves, we do that too to ourselves. We say like, this is all that I am.
Right.
So for me to nourish all different parts of me, what makes Addison beyond being non-binary has been so healing as well.
Yeah. I think that's so empowering and beautiful and at the same time simple. And I don't mean that to reduce its value. I mean, like, it is a simple thing that I think we can all do is wonder, like, what is that one passion that we, you know, put away as a kid because somebody told us to, you know, or because other things got in the way. And I love that you use the word hobbies because that is something that, you know, I'll just in my personal life, I've been trying so hard to find what are my hobbies. And I love the invitation to go back to like what I had in childhood, because it's easy, especially I think not only being trans and queer period in the world, but then if you add the work that we do, which is somehow all about only being queer and trans, even though we know it's bigger than that, it's easy to get pigeonholed and just kind of get lost in that work. And, people always ask me what my hobbies are and I can never answer the question because I'm always doing work.
Right.
And so I love the invitation. I think anybody should take that invitation to invest in hobbies.
Right. And you don't need to also monetize everything either.
Yes.
Like, I think it's just, I understand people are trying to hustle and do what they got to do.
Yes.
And I also encourage just having one thing just for yourself that you don't monetize, or maybe that you don't even tell anyone else that you're doing.
Yeah.
Just something just for you.
Yeah.
I think that's really important.
I love that. I love that. So yeah, I have learned to play guitar and I'm horrible at it. But this is good because I can't monetize it. And it's something that I really enjoyed doing.
And you can enjoy something and not be, like you said, good at it, right? Yeah. You know, like it's okay.
I think it's great, actually. It's something that's been really humbling for me and like fun. And just like, because I'm not good at it, it's demanded that I just do it because I like it and for no other reason.
You got it.
And I think that's been great. On the days, so you were talking about different ways that you present yourself on days when you have more or less energy, and you said it comes down to, do you have your own back? And what I also heard as you talked about that was, it's what capacity do you have for other people's whatever, right? Other people's BS, other people's issues with themselves that they put onto you.
Yeah.
And that capacity question, I think that's such a great way to empower yourself. It's not about other people. Like you said, you can't control other people, but you can control yourself. And this is, I think, what's messed up about a lot of self-care practices is self-care and boundary stuff is usually rigid. It's like, have a boundary, set the boundary. But what you're asking is actually flexible. It says, what am I capable of doing today? What do I have the energy for today? And how will I adjust to be kind and nurturing and nourishing, your word, to where I am today? And I think that's so beautiful.
Yeah. It's a daily thing, right? Again, too, like we can set those boundaries or goals, you know, and set that for our entire lives moving forward. Or we can also say like, okay, today, what are my intentions? Today, what are my boundaries? Today, what do I need?
Yeah.
Today, what do I value? And I think that's really important to do. And I don't see it necessarily as flexibility. It's just more about just like continuous checking in.
Mm. Okay. So not flexibility. Maybe what about like adapting?
Yeah. Oh, adaptability sounds right. Maybe. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like actually maybe it's even deeper than that. It's sort of intuitiveness. It's really listening to your body and listening to how you are sitting in yourself. I think about it as like, I had an eating disorder, and when I was going through recovery, it wasn't about this is how much I have to eat. It was, what do I need today, right? Mm-hmm. Like it was really asking myself, what am I hungry for and how much am I hungry for? And can I actually adjust as I go? Like I'm hungry for, you know, a bowl of rice and chicken or something, whatever. Salad bowl, Chipotle bowl. Can I actually adjust as I go? Am I full now? Do I need more? Is it different from the day before?
Right.
And it sounds like it's a very similar process that you're describing, is like, what do I actually have the appetite for today?
The capacity, like you talked about earlier. Yeah. You're totally right. Mm.
I love that as a tool. sorry. I'm really holding on to that one. I think it's great. I think that it's something that anybody can kind of take from. You don't have to be trans or queer or have something about you that other people have an issue with or whatever. No,
actually, it's just for trans and non-binary people, just for people who are listening.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm so struck constantly when I talk to other trans and non-binary folks about how universal our ways of surviving actually are and how we've been relegated to this category of other, but all the ways that you're describing how you have survived the world are ways that anybody could use to thrive, right? Or to dig into themselves more. And so on that note, we do have to start to wrap up because I don't want to take your whole day.
We're good.
I'm curious. I was describing your beard as beautiful. And we were talking also about how beards could be considered masculine, how beards can be something that sort of decides one's gender for somebody else. Right. And I'm curious, in a perfect world, how you would describe your beard and yourself and how you walk, you know, specifically what your beard means to you, I guess, is what I'm getting at. I know this is not a really central question.
But No. This makes sense. Okay. I think my beard for me is, I mean, I could say like it's a sign of resistance. It's a sign of like, you know, just like boldness and all that stuff. You know, because I understand the meaning that it has for other people.
Mm.
For me, though, I just like it. I don't know how to explain it. Like, it's soft. It's full. I like that, you know, how the light picks up like certain types of colors in the beard, too. I also like how it just blends in with my hair as well. And I don't know. That's all I can say. It's just, I like it and that's it.
I think it's a perfect answer. I'm going to say one more thing on this and you can, if you have any thoughts. So there's a book called How Far the Light Reaches, and it's by Sabrina Imbler, who is a non-binary Chinese American mixed race author. Their book is all about, like, it's a vignette about marine life and then a vignette about their life.
Cool.
And this one chapter is about a it's a cuttlefish, and the cuttlefish changes colors based on what's behind it. Mm-hmm. And especially when it's frightened, right? When it's attacked, when it's, you know, camouflaging, it changes colors. And Sabrina goes through all of these different, ways that it changes when it's frightened. And then they write something like, I'm going to paraphrase, but yeah. They write something like, I am not interested in calling it camouflage. I want to know how the cuttlefish changes when it's not in fright, when it's not in opposition, when it's not in resistance. I'm interested to see how the cuttlefish changes and how the cuttlefish lives when it's in community, when it's about sex, when it's about joy.
Right.
And the quote is better how they say it, but it was such a beautiful way of saying, like, I don't want to define things by resistance. Right. And the words that you then used, bold being one of them, I'm sure some people might call it courageous or resilient or whatever.
Brave.
Brave. Yeah. Yes. And it's not that you aren't those things. It's that what kind of space could we create for you and for anybody, if it wasn't in opposition, right? Mm. Your answer was perfect because it was so simple. It was, well, I just like it. And yeah. I think that's so powerful if we could just let it be that.
Yeah.
So I think I just wanted to end on that because I love that you shared it that way.
Yeah, I think, it's just, you like what you like. It can be that simple. Mm. And leave it there. Don't feel like you have to explain yourself. Like, yeah. I feel like I've had to explain my beard so much. And I just like it. Sorry.
Take it back. Don't apologize.
I'm Canadian, so that's why I said it.
I hear through your explanation of yourself this like beautiful self-loving as an act, permission, and permission to just be. And every answer that you've given me seems to come back to this, like, I want to grant myself this permission to just be this, to just like this, to just maybe in this moment, not show every part of myself as I go out into the world. And I think that, that's what I'm taking from this. I mean, there's lots that I've learned from you, but that's like a number one thing that I want to hold, which is this, like, I don't actually have to explain and I can just be here as I am. Okay. Addison, thank you so much.
Thank you, Skylar.
I am so grateful for you and for your work. I'm so grateful the world has you. We need you. Mm-hmm. And very grateful that you drove all this way to come here through the traffic. Where can people find you? And what should people know about what's upcoming for you?
Yeah. You can find me on Instagram at BreakTheBinary. You can also visit my website for more information about my services. That's www.BreakTheBinaryLLC.com. Beyond that, just check out my Instagram for updates on what I'm doing, any events I'm going to, and people can message me either, through my website or on Instagram, and I'm happy to respond. I might not respond to every message. and sometimes I might not have the right response. So I might connect you with someone else, but yeah.
Excellent. And they can find you at LA Pride.
And at LA Pride too. Yeah. Yeah. So come to LA Pride. It's June 9th to 11th and we're going to have a great time. We're actually exciting. Doing a trans galleria
Year.
So it's going to be kind of like a gallery mm-hmm. of all art by trans and non-binary artists in Los Angeles. So come on by. It'll be a good time.
Excellent. That sounds awesome. I should come if I can.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Anything else you want to add?
Could be
about anything else really.
Yeah. I mean, we may not deserve certain characteristics or certain traits, but I think that everyone deserves kindness and respect and validation.
Community.
I think that's really important. We don't thrive, I think, on our own. I think that we thrive when we're connected and reach out. I think that even for folks, too, who associate red states with having no community and blue states with having so much community. I know here in California that it's really Los Angeles and San Francisco that are only the quote unquote blue areas where you're going to find community. But even in all those different areas in between major cities, in the South too, in states where they're pushing for these anti-trans laws, there's still community. In fact, there's sometimes strong community there.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's really, really important for us to recognize that, support those communities, and also to encourage people to reach out to those communities and connect them with them.
I think people forget that state governments are actually not all that representative of their constituents.
No.
And many of the states are designed to not be representative of the constituents because of racism.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really key that you name that. Thank you.
Yeah, come on, redlining. Oh my gosh. That's a whole other topic.
Yes, we do not have time for that one.
Yeah.
But Addison, thank you so much again for taking the time. I really, really appreciate it. And I know people are going to gain a lot from this episode.
Thank you, Skylar.
So grateful that Addison was able to join us for this amazing conversation. So let's get right to the question. How do we find belonging without conforming? As Addison emphasized in this episode, there are so many different ways for people to be themselves, right? Different ways to be trans, different ways to be non-binary, different ways to have gender affirmation, to transition, to feel like ourselves. And I think one of the most salient things that Addison shared with us is, how do we actually feel the most like ourselves? And that, to me, is actually a driving question that I've used in my transition and in my life, is constantly asking myself, how do I feel more like myself? And what actions can I take that will align me with that goal of feeling more like myself? As we discussed, transphobia actually affects everyone. And Addison said this quote, and I want to really highlight it. Cis people too would really benefit from understanding that their gender identities aren't based on certain characteristics. This is to say that we all curb our own selves. We all try to define ourselves by these standardized essential rules that society has given us to say, this is how we define ourselves. And it's our jobs to actually take a step back from that and say, wait, maybe these boxes don't define me. Maybe a piece of it feels good, but maybe the other piece of it doesn't. And how can we take what works and leave what doesn't? Another thing Addison helped us remember is about belonging not only being in the present. Addison said that they help themselves find belonging by looking at the past, digging into the ancestry that exists within trans and queer communities, that we've always been here, and how that can also remind us that we still belong now. Addison also spoke about how it's human nature to categorize other people, to try to understand another human's role. And I don't disagree with them, especially as somebody who has a background in psychology. We know that people try to categorize, that brains love to categorize. But the evolution for us here is, can we also bring curiosity as we categorize, right? Even as a trans person myself, I find myself having a knee-jerk reaction to categorize other people. But can I insert some curiosity? Can I say, why did I believe that this person was this gender or the other? Why did I have that assumption or that bias about this person? And that curiosity, I think, is us engaging our compassion and our humanity. Lastly, one of my favorite things that Addison reinforced for us is self-love is a daily journey. It's not something that we achieve one day and say, here I am at the top of Mount Self-Love, right? It is something that we constantly are nourishing. And Addison also brought something really important, which is the other side of self-love, which is sometimes anger can act as self-love, right? A response of allowing ourselves to feel angry, upset, grieving, whatever that supposed negative emotion is, allowing that in is part of that daily journey to allow ourselves to be all of ourselves. In my life, other trans people are often the strongest, brightest, most powerful examples of what it means to belong without conforming. And so I hope that this episode brought you a bit of that strength, that warmth, that reminder of your own humanity, so that maybe it might help you find the ability to belong without needing to conform as well. Lots of love. See you next week on Dear Skylar.